You're listening to Richie T.
and Lisa Valentine Clark.
It's The Lisa, Lisa Show.
Coming up this hour, we're going to be talking about a new approach to cure narcissism that has yet to be tried mainstream.
And the phrase, I've waited my entire life for this, has all new meaning as we approach this morning's buzz. I'll tell you about it coming up in 15 minutes.
Whenever we speak of narcissism, we usually hear how we should avoid it in our lives and separate ourselves from people with these narcissistic tendencies. But should this be the first option to consider? If you're in a relationship with or love someone who's a narcissist, you probably don't want to simply walk away and give up on them. And if they have a genuine desire to change and to grow, well, then shouldn't they be given the chance to show it? However, there aren't many approaches to curing, and I'm air quoting, curing narcissism that have strong outcomes. But today, we're talking with someone who believes in a new approach that isn't quite the mainstream yet. Dr. Robert Enright holds the Aristotelian Professorship in Forgiveness Science with the Department of Educational Psychology at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, is a licensed psychologist and co-founder of the International Forgiveness Institute. And we welcome him to the show today. Welcome, Robert.
Thank you for having me, Richie.
I love the term narcissist because this, like so many other things, we just throw it around and we don't necessarily know exactly what it means, or we like to just label people and be like, that person's a narcissist, this person is toxic, I have ADD, and really these are just misnomers in some situations, but that there are actual definitive principles of someone who is a narcissist. What are those?
Yes, this actually comes from the American Psychiatric Association. They have what they call a Diagnostic and Statistical Manual. And they are actually quite humble in trying to understand narcissism. They start by saying, we don't know a lot about it. But what they basically say is if there's long-term, that's a key issue here, if there's a long-term sense of an exaggerated sense of the self, that's getting in the way of relationships with others by basically devaluing others while you exalt yourself, and this is actually getting in the way of your functioning, that is narcissism. Hmm. And so, you know, we all have our little egos here and there, and that's not narcissism. That's just fallen human nature, so to speak. And so the idea of long-term grandiosity that gets in the way of your having empathy toward others is basically what concerns the American Psychiatric Association.
How common is it?
It is not that common. According to the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, it's probably 0.1 to a few percentage points of the population. Mm. And so, of course, that's for the narcissistic personality disorder.
Right.
Okay? And so it's very small, but do we all have a tendency to not cross that line to disorder and make others' lives miserable? Sure. But we don't know exactly what percentage that is. You know, falling into that trap, probably 100% of us.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. As I, you know, served as an introduction to you, I mentioned that you have sort of a new approach that isn't quite mainstream yet. And that, to me, makes me very interested and lean in a little closer so that I can hear every word of that. What is that approach that you have that maybe isn't being quite as discussed yet?
Well, as a professor and a licensed psychologist, I got a little radical in my career by placing philosophy into the mental health professions.
Hmm.
And by philosophy, I mean taking from the wisdom of the ages, such as Aristotle. Okay? And I do hold that Aristotelian professorship in forgiveness science, as you had said. Aristotle, from thousands of years ago, has become my mentor, where he said the road to happiness is to grow in the moral virtues. Okay?
Hmm.
And the moral virtue I have committed myself to in research for the past 36 years is the moral virtue of forgiveness, or forgiving those who have hurt you deeply and unjustly. And so when people come to me and they have anxiety and depression, I oftentimes ask, have you been treated cruelly by others? And a lot of times the answer is yes. Mm-hmm. That starts with anger. Then it starts with resentment and hatred. And so the softness in them lessens. So when I help them to forgive, I'm actually asking them to engage in a moral virtue, which is goodness toward other people. In this case, goodness toward others who've deliberately hurt you. And that's a struggle to grow in that virtue. But over time, people actually begin to lessen their depression, their anxiety, their anger, and they get their lives back. And so it came to me that, well, what about another moral virtue for narcissism, which actually is the direct opposite of narcissism, which is humility. Mm-hmm. You see, Aristotle as a philosopher tells us that when you practice any moral virtue, it is bounded by what he calls two vices. And humility is bounded by arrogance, which is a form of narcissism, or timidity, where you let everyone walk all over you.
Right.
And humility is in between those two. So I thought to myself, well, let me take a look at the scientific literature and see how many studies have been done actually helping people grow in humility when they have that extreme imbalance toward that one side of the vice that is called arrogance for Aristotle, and the contemporary parlance is narcissism. And there's nothing out there. So I thought, well, you know, it seems to me that what we need to do is get those who have the label of narcissistic personality disorder, or the husband or wife who's really a big pain, not having a disorder, but being insensitive with, you know, verbal comments that aren't really helpful and upbuilding. Why don't we start consciously and deliberately in our homes, start practicing humility? And what is that? That is the reality, the balance of seeing yourself truthfully as you are, with both your strengths and your weaknesses, where you're not arrogant, you're not timid, and start talking about this, about humility, and try to deliberately practice it in the small things. For example, if you're impatient because you're hungry for dinner and your spouse isn't quite ready yet, practice the reality of empathy toward that person, and that you're not the only one in the world, and that patience here is going to be good for you, and that's a humble approach. And if we do that in the little things of life, we might be able to, as Aristotle says, we grow in the virtues, to actually start applying humility in the big things. When we see a partner with whom we're very dissatisfied, we're very impatient, we're very angry, well, okay, I've been there too. I've had my foibles and my difficulties. And so I think the practice of humility, which is a moral virtue, needs to be placed into the mental health professions. And the mental health professions do not usually have an overlay of philosophy at all, and they are also hesitant to bring in the moral virtues. But our science shows that when we bring in forgiveness, for example, it works beautifully in helping people overcome anger, resentment, get relationships back and their lives back.
We're visiting with Dr. Robert Enright about how narcissists can change, and we've taken a particular in-depth look at humility. Some of what you also talk about is the three R's, and I found this fascinating. I wondered if you could open up what those three R's are for folks and how we might be able to institute those.
Yeah, the three R's are what I call remorse and repentance and recompense. When someone has really stumbled and really kind of blown it, so to speak, in a relationship, it's a way to reinstitute trust. So if we have someone who has these narcissistic tendencies and trust now is damaged in the relationship, and the person sees and says, oh boy, yeah, my pattern is such that I need to practice this moral virtue of humility, and the person starts that, still the other one who's been the object of this narcissism has damaged trust. And so how then now, while your partner is practicing humility, do you start establishing trust again with the person, and that's when I bring out the three R's. Mm-hmm. And I say, what we have to look for in the one who says, I am working on my narcissism, I am trying to be humble, is first of all, remorse. Remorse is an inner sorrow. In other words, inside the person, they really don't like what they've done and they want to change. It's a deliberate, willed change within the person. And we can see that. There's a late psychiatrist named R.C.A. Hunter who wrote a piece way back in 1978 and said, you don't have to be trained in the mental health professions to see remorse in others. Mm-hmm. They wear it on their sleeve, so to speak. You can see it in their eyes. You can see it in their manner toward you. And so inner sorrow, you can see it if you look for it. Repentance. Is the person now, from the position of remorse, saying they're sorry? This is a language issue, not an inner issue. Are they saying something to you where you are definitely seeing that they know they've blown it, they want to change? And then recompense is doing the best you can to make it right. Now, of course, you can't make right every snide remark you said over the dinner table to a spouse for 3 years.
Sure.
But you can start making up for it with kindness now, okay, with a held hand where you mean it, a kind word. So remorse, inner sorrow, the repentance, the language, and the recompense, the behavior to make it right. When the one who's been hurt begins to see this, and the one with the narcissistic tendencies, that can start building up trust little by little. And the trust usually comes slowly, earned brick by brick.
Is the biggest struggle for those who are a narcissistic that first step, the narcissism in the three R's?
Well, the remorse.
Yeah, the remorse, I'm sorry.
The remorse, yes. First of all, that's why we want to practice humility first.
Right.
Because without the humility, the remorse really isn't there, and the person's going to keep saying, it's your fault.
Mm-hmm.
You burned the toast this morning, and that's why I'm so angry. I've had a very bad day because you burned the toast. Well, that's not reality. So that's why practice humility first in the small things, and then the person might see, hey, I have had a pattern here that is toward the vice of arrogance rather than the balance of the moral virtue of humility. I have to change. That's when remorse starts to blossom.
So then when we talk about this principle of humility, and we've certainly been in talking about it, the exchange with narcissism, does humility provide hope and I'm air quoting again, a cure with other mental illnesses?
Yes, because there's what we call comorbidity coming alongside narcissism, particularly the narcissistic personality disorder. And, for example, depression is quite common with people who have what they sometimes call more of the passive form of narcissism, where they're kind of quiet and in their own shell. And there could be anxiety as well. And so as one clears up this vice of arrogance and moves closer to the center of the moral virtue of humility, depression and anxiety should lessen. We see that in our forgiveness studies, because forgiveness includes the moral virtue of humility. I have to be humble enough with the wounds you have given me not to throw them back to you. And we see depression going down characteristically when people grow in forgiveness. It should be the same as they practice the moral virtue of humility.
Been visiting with Dr. Robert Enright, a licensed psychologist and co-founder of the International Forgiveness Institute. I would be remiss if I didn't ask you before you go, Dr. Enright, what exactly does the International Forgiveness Institute do?
We are a service organization to help people understand what forgiveness is, because 99% of people with whom I talk misunderstand what forgiveness is, although they think they know what it is. They'll say, oh, it's moving on or just getting over it. No, no. It's to try to be good to the one who hurt you, and that's heroic, challenging and difficult. So we put out information to adults, and we also have forgiveness education programs for children all over the world. We're working in Taiwan, we're working in the Philippines, Israel, Iran, Northern Ireland, and we help children at an early age understand what forgiveness is and to practice it in their own life, so when the storms of life come in adulthood, they'll be ready for those.
People can get those great resources by going to internationalforgiveness.com, or be sure to check out Dr. Robert Enright's Psychology Today blog. It's called The Forgiving Life. Dr. Enright, thanks for being on the show. I can't believe it. It's time we get to give away another annual National Parks Pass as part of Lisa's Adventure Club. Lisa, do you want to dial the numbers this week?
Would you let me? Yeah, I get so excited, you know, that my fingers just float it up sometimes.
But if your fingers are shaking, yeah, you're not going to hit the right numbers. Okay, calm. All right, here we go.
Hello?
Hello, is this Star Jenkins?
Yeah, this is Star. What can I do for you?
Well, no, it's what can we do for you? Congratulations. This is Lisa from The Lisa Show, and you are the winner of Lisa's Adventure Club.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you have won an annual National Parks Pass for a whole year. That's, you know, what annual means.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Now, are you the adventurous type?
I am, actually, or we are. My family and I are.
Yeah, what kind of adventures do you go on?
We always like to go backpacking and, like, hiking and camping, and so this will be great.
Oh, this is perfect.
So now I have an annual pass, and we can go do some more exploring of the national park.
Now, I want you to dream with us for just a minute, because what we've given you now is essentially access to the 63 national parks in the United States. I know that there are a lot close to home, but if you could go further, a greater destination, somewhere in the United States that maybe you've never been to or you've dreamed about before, where, what national park would you go to?
Like, if I could go anywhere?
Yeah, anywhere.
Sky's the limit.
I would love to go to Alaska. I'm sure they have few national parks.
Oh, yeah.
What we've given you now is the opportunity to dream, because we just made it a little bit more affordable for you and your family to create those experiences, maybe make that vacation destination in the future. And you did it. You did it all yourself.
You did it.
By entering to win Lisa's Adventure Club. Other folks can win just like Star did by going to BYUradio.org. You can enter your information, and you know what? We could be calling you next week, just like we're calling Star today. Congratulations, Star.
Coming up, are you looking for new out-of-the-box date ideas, maybe for this weekend, this upcoming week? We've got it for you.
The phrase, "I've waited my whole life for this," means very much one thing to one person, but something very different to another. I'll tell you about it coming up in your Morning Buzz.
Thank you for listening to The Lisa Show. You and your family are prepared for a medical emergency or even just everyday care? Well, we've got some practical things that you need to know. That's coming up in about 20 minutes. But first, it's time for your Morning Buzz with Richie T.
That's right. It's three things that are trending online right now, things that folks are talking about, and certainly a lot of the eyes of this nation are turned towards Los Angeles County.
Oh, yeah.
The nation's most populous county, by the way, where they will reinstate its mask mandate starting on Saturday evening at 11:59 p.m. Why not midnight? I don't know. Maybe because they go, well, is that midnight? Does that mean Sunday? Does that mean Monday? We all do that
midnight thing.
The order will require masking indoors regardless of vaccination status. They say, "We share our deepest condolences with those of you who have lost friends, loved ones, and family during this difficult time. We expect to keep masking requirements in place until we begin to see improvements in our community and the transmission of COVID-19. But waiting for us to be at high community transmission level before making a change would be too late." According to a news release, there were 210 new coronavirus cases reported
June 15th. Mm. Yesterday, there was 1,500.
Oh,
it's the
wow.
highest total of new cases since mid-March. And so they said, nope, we're not waiting anymore. Mask up again. So all eyes there, because that could be an indication of maybe coming to a community near you. Now, you may have noticed, if you check your bank account daily in sort of a feverish obsession, I'm not saying that's what I do, but I'm not saying that's not what I do. You might notice that you have some more money in your bank account. This, of course, because the federal government has started their incentive if you have the children. White House says $15 billion in payments has been sent out to families of nearly 60 million children. It's the expanded child tax credit. Families will receive the funds by direct deposit, and how much you get will depend on income and number of eligible children. This is exciting, ladies and gentlemen, because yeah. this is why Lisa is going to be able to retire with 111 children under the age of 18. She's going to be able to just walk out today and not have to worry about ever working ever again.
Funny.
For every child under the age of six, families get $3,600, so $300 per month. For every child of the ages from 6 to 17, the amount is $3,000 or $250 per month. The amount starts phasing out for families with higher incomes, especially above $150,000 for married couples filing jointly, or $112,500 for single parents who file as head of household. So you can find out how much you may be getting by hopping online. And then finally this, as we turn our eyes heavenward, we look towards space. We know that Jeff Bezos is going on a little road trip with his brother next week. They're flying into outer space. Or is it? That's an argument for a different time. But certainly going to space. There was an auction winner that had paid $28 million, but because of a scheduling conflict, couldn't go to space with the Bezos road trip. And so now
they were busy doing something else.
I don't know what it is. It's a scheduling conflict.
Okay. All right.
So now an 18-year-old physics student whose father heads an investment management firm is set to go with the Bezos. Dad said, "Hey, son, you want to go to space?" And I kid you not, this is what the son said. "I'm so excited. I've waited my whole life for something like this."
Bless his heart.
So, I mean, that is a lifetime of wait. I'm sorry that he had to wait so long as he did.
How did he do it?
In addition on that, female aviator Wally Funk will also be on this flight. Yeah, a female named Wally, and you'll hear news people say he's a gentleman. It's not. Wally is a woman.
Okay, good to know.
82 years old flying to space.
Wow.
So the oldest person in space and the youngest person in space will find themselves awkwardly sitting in a ship, not knowing what to talk about because of the generation gaps.
They're going to come together. Yeah. I'm predicting it. This is going to be a beautiful friendship.
They'll look at each other and they'll say, "You know what? I've waited my entire life to take this trip." And that, my friends, is your Morning Buzz.
Thanks, Richie T.
I was listening to a podcast the other day. One of the things that these two individuals are talking about, the whole thing is about marriage and couples and
relationships.
They're not therapists, but they're two people who have found themselves both in the highest of highs and lowest of lows within their marriage. And they talked about the idea of dating and constantly dating. So I felt like to take this out a little bit further,
sure.
You know, whether we're single and looking to court someone, or we're dating and courting, but we're not yet married, dates can occur. When we're married and maybe we're newly married, dates occur, or we've been married for a real long time, dates occur in all of those sort of scenarios. So I want to give a little injection of a spark of creativity with some summer date ideas. This headline, by the way, not given by me, but by the great blogger whom I stole this from.
Oh, cool.
Worthy of a Nicholas Sparks novel is is what these date ideas are.
Okay.
I'll leave that part of the debate up for you. It's just really summer date ideas, and I feel like it is applicable at any age and any stage of relationships. So here are just a few, and I'll go through them pretty quick, but to hopefully spur some creativity. Again, you don't even have to do any of these, but maybe it gives you an idea that goes, "Oh, you know what I should do? You know what
I
would love to do?"
I've always wanted to do that. Yeah.
First one, grab dinner or drinks at a rooftop restaurant. maybe
yeah,
in your town.
Think about your. I like that because it's like thinking about your surroundings a little bit more when we focus, like me, so much on the food, right? Mm-hmm. Like instead, focus on the scenery.
Yeah, maybe the food isn't, to your point, isn't all that great, but the scenery is really great. You could watch the sunset, you know, something like that. So a rooftop restaurant. How about this? I love this one. One of my first dates with my wife, listening to music in the park.
Oh, yeah, that's sweet.
And you could do that in a couple of ways. Mm-hmm. There are lots of parks that have, like, you know, the summertime either recitals or, you know, big concerts or those kind of things. That is a way to do it. But if maybe you have or your partner has peculiar musical tastes, you could set it up to where you go to the park and, you know, you spread out a blanket and then you bring, because everything is chargeable and Bluetooth connectivity, you just set up and listen to the music that you want.
Sweet.
Maybe you make a playlist. That's not on this, but you could make a playlist that says, I love you, or I want to date you, or what was your name again? Depending on which stage in dating you're at.
You know, back in the day, it was a mixed tape, a great mixed cassette tape with a lot of meaning and artwork done on the outside. It's not a lost art. Bring it back. I like this.
I thought this was particularly interesting. The suggestion is go to a movie, but diving deeper, because I think a lot of people, that's sort of the go-to, right? Mm-hmm. Dinner and a movie.
Sure.
But hit a matinee and then go walk around before or after and talk about what you took away from the movie.
I like that.
That Black Widow, that was sure a lot of action in that film. I am very startled.
Well, and especially if you're really into cinema and talking about the director and if it's true to the original script or story, like that can be a really great discussion point.
And you know what it isn't? It's not just dinner and a movie.
Yeah,
and that's
exactly
what the intention of all this. You'll get real nerdy for this one. Mm-hmm. Visit a museum, especially.
Okay. Now you're talking my language.
With museums now opening back up post-pandemic. Mm-hmm. I think that can be really powerful. Or to lean into some of the things that were caused by the pandemic, if you are with a partner that loves to travel, would like to see places like the Louvre and other places like that, there is access online because those things were shut down, still available that you can be able to perhaps explore some things you wouldn't have been able to do otherwise or in the past. So another great idea, cooking together.
Oh, yeah.
Go to the grocery store, pick out whatever it is, or a farmer's market. Be able to pick out those fresh things and just be like, what did you get? I got this. What did you get? I got this. Let's make something from that. You could have a beach day if you're lucky enough to live around an ocean or a lake. Doesn't have to be anything more than just sitting by the water for me. For me and my wife, honestly, we could just sit by the water.
And be fine.
And just the waves
it's so
lapping onto the shore. Mm-hmm. I love that. A movie marathon. Nothing wrong with watching movies, but maybe you take it to the next level and watch all of the Jurassic Parks or Back to the Futures or Star Wars
that.
If you have 2 days.
That's cool.
Or Harry Potter's. Harry! If you want to get into that. Just taking a walk. Maybe you are not one that would be prone to just, you know, hold hand in hand and walk around the neighborhood. Or not, if you're not to the hand-holding part of a relationship, walk around the neighborhood. Walk around a different part of a different neighborhood that you're not used to. Take a drive to a neighborhood and walk around. You could watch the sunset. We sort of talked about that with the rooftop restaurant, but go to an intentional place with a great view of the sunset. It's unfortunate that a lot of the West is experiencing forest fires currently, but what it does make for is some pretty intense sunsets.
I know. I felt kind of guilty the other night. I was outside with some friends and they said, oh, the sky looks so beautiful because of the pollution and smog and from the fires. But it's pretty. Should we take a picture? And we just all felt really guilty.
But, you know, it is in fact what it is. Do your part as far as those things go, but maybe go watch the sunset. A thing that is interesting if you're early on in a relationship with someone, host a party together.
Oh.
You invite five friends.
That's a bold move.
You invite five friends, they invite five friends.
Huh.
And see what your friends are like, and you can get a real quick idea of what that person is really
that's
like.
That's a good point.
How about taking a pottery class?
Oh, I would love that.
Yeah, call Patrick Swayze or Demi Moore.
Yeah.
They'll give you the ideas about how this ceramic class might go.
Well, basically, it's a ghost.
Yeah. Well, I don't have that on this.
Are you just alluding, take a class.
Are you alluding to some
just
sort of movie or
class.
Something? a class, additionally, if pottery is not your thing, you know, these paint by number classes, or they go and they teach you how to do it, or, you know, that kind of stuff. Brunch. We're going to get into some other things that you love here. Consider a brunch or a fancy dinner. Get all dressed up and, you know, to the nines, as my grandpa always used to say. Go out to a fancy place. Maybe you've saved up for a little bit and you want to go do that. Go shopping. This can be an interesting thing for a date where...
I wouldn't think that people would like that.
Well, I mean, it depends. This is for all sorts of folks.
Okay.
But like you go to maybe a flea market or a secondhand store and, you know, I know your sizes, you know mine.
Yeah,
I get to pick out what you're going to wear, and then we go do something wearing those clothes. Or it's a fashion show or, you know, whatever the thing may be. We've already mentioned the farmer's market. How about getting active? Just, you know, you go for a run, go for a jog, hit the gym. Maybe it'll be a way to help motivate you on some other goals that you have as a partnership, but being able to do something that you wouldn't ordinarily do. Go bowling. We recently talked about bowling here on the Lisa Show.
Yeah, that's a great date activity.
It's a way for you to not strike out.
Okay. I knew it was coming.
I couldn't help it.
Okay.
Plan a night in. One of my best dates I've ever done. Sweatpants and a cozy sweatshirt in the wintertime, and we watched Christmas movies. That was, I mean, obviously in the past, but... planning for that night in, because you put so much pressure on what are we going to do?
Yeah, where are we going to go?
Oh, we want to
make sure. Take the pressure off. Yeah.
Plan a night in. Spend a day poolside, just right by the pool. Get yourself your favorite beverage. Maybe make your partner their favorite beverage and just hang out by the pool. What are we going to do today? This? Anything else? No, just this. Just spending a day poolside. Couples massage. Those can be kind of fun. Go to a concert. A lot of concerts are returning. A lot of these.
That's great because there's a lot of downtime waiting for the concert to happen. Mm-hmm. You can comment on other people in the audience, on the music.
I love that you tried to couch that way. You can comment on other people in the audience. You mean people watch and call out people being weird. It's all right.
Because at concerts, the people watching is so good.
So great. So fun. Seeing a play. Whether a musical or a straight play, a great way to be able to go out and have an opportunity. Again, maybe thought-provoking. Having a picnic. You can go to a wedding, hopefully one that you were invited to, but I know people who have done that.
I don't know. That's high stakes if you're just barely starting to date someone and you take them to a wedding. That's kind of a big deal.
I'm leaning the other way. Go to a wedding that you weren't invited to with someone that you just barely met and go, what do you think about this? Do you see this for us?
Do you think it's going to last?
What would you do differently?
That's so uncomfortable. That's
funny. I want you to know, it looks like it's a wedding for somebody else, but I actually brought you here for us. Go ahead. We're getting a two for one. Bike riding, something that as adults we sort of let go of. I know a lot of people, when they get back on a bike after years, they go, wait, I really like this. Why did I ever leave bike riding in my past?
Yeah.
Travel somewhere together, again, knowing the condition of or where you're at and within your relationship, but having the opportunity to jet off to another city or another country or just a staycation, you drive away somewhere. Maybe take that road. I know people have talked about here in Utah, Highway 12 is one. Route 66 is another one that people can do. The Pacific Coast Highway out in California, where you can drive some and then stay and be able to get great views and food and do some of all this. Just a couple more. Take a workout class together, something that you may not have ever done before, like a yoga, a hot yoga. Maybe you're doing, I don't know, a Zumba class together. Take the opportunity, especially if neither of you have ever done it. It's a great way to just go and laugh and enjoy with each other.
And like learn it together, because then I think you learn a lot about the other person, right? If you're trying to get to know them a little bit better, understanding like what it could be like when you're learning a new skill. Very fun.
And then finally, take a cooking class. There's nothing like rolling up your sleeves.
Would you do that?
Oh, yeah. I took a cooking class a couple of years ago with my wife, and we learned how to make custards, frozen and otherwise, and lemon curds, and it was great fun.
Prove it. Bring some lemon curd into the office.
I still have some in the freezer from years. No, I don't. It was a super great time.
How
a lot
cool.
of community colleges have it, and even high school. like it, continuing ed kind of stuff. Uh-huh. You can go and do them. Typically, you're just kind of paying for the food. You get to be with other couples that are there kind of doing the same thing. And even if there aren't other couples there, it's just you and maybe a couple other random strangers. It's really fun to kind of learn a new skill aside your partner. And
that's funny.
And if it fails, you have a great story. And if it doesn't fail, it's a delicious success.
You can't lose.
Coming up, we'll be hearing from a pediatric ER nurse and mom who's working to give parents confidence in caring for the medical needs of their kids.
Now, we want to switch gears here a little bit. And, you know, when we're talking about connections, we want to really make a huge connection with you to our Adventure Club. That's right. It's time for Lisa's Adventure Club. We're giving away an annual National Parks Pass. You can go anywhere in the country. There's so many different parks. How many parks are there?
63 national parks that you'll be able to travel to for free.
For free. And we're giving away one every week this summer. And then at the end of the summer, we're giving away a grand prize, which includes a $500 Visa gift card. And the process to enter is so easy.
You just go to BYURadio.org. Look for the banner that says Lisa's Adventure Club and then click on it. Then it will say, hey, would you like to share this on your social media for more entries?
Yeah.
Hey, would you like to tell a friend about this for more entries?
I would.
Hey, do you happen to know the secret word of the week that you could enter in? Type that in. Gets you more entries. And the best part is if you're entered to win, say last week, for example, carries over.
Yeah.
And if you enter again next week, carries over. You could exponentially have so many entries, you wouldn't even know what to do with them by the end of the summer. BYURadio.org. Go and enter right away. 127% chance that you will not win if you do not enter.
I was talking to my neighbor the other day, and she said, we were talking about first aid and how you keep your family safe. And I was feeling pretty confident, and I said something like, yeah, I know what to do with, you know, I know the Heimlich maneuver, MBD. And yeah. I know that you're supposed to, if you're giving CPR, do it to the beat of staying alive, staying alive.
Yeah.
And we were just talking about that, and she's like, yeah, but do you know what to do so someone doesn't bleed out?
Tourniquet.
And I was like, I don't know. Like, yeah. I wouldn't feel confident. And her whole point is that you think that you know what you would do in an emergency, but mm-hmm. in an actual emergency situation, you don't know.
Yeah.
And knowing that it's summertime and that we're trying to create wonderful memories with our kids and our friends and family, like, you know, outdoor, do you feel confident that no matter what happens, you would know what to do in basic emergency situations? And so that led to a different kind of discussion that we had that I thought we should continue here on the show for everyone today. And so we're going to bring in an expert and not just someone who is, you know, anecdotally heard a thing or two, but actually knows what they're talking about, which is Shannon Tripp, a nurse with 10 years of pediatric ER and 4 children under her belt, here to tell us how we can be a little bit more confident in keeping our families safe this summer. Thanks for coming to the show, Shannon.
Of course. Thank you guys so much for having me. I'm so happy to be here. So grateful that you guys are spreading this kind of information to parents. It's awesome.
Well, I think that most parents don't feel very confident when it comes to navigating medical emergencies. And I shouldn't say that. I think, you know, a lot of us have the kits. We got first aid kits in our car and in our house.
I was going to say, I feel like there's those that have no preparation.
Yeah.
Then there's those of us who really rest on our laurels and go, I got a kit. I don't know how to use it.
But have you ever opened up that kit? It's like, well, there's some Band-Aids of different sizes, a couple of ibuprofen. I don't know. Maybe some scissors.
Yeah. Gauze.
Yeah. Gauze for sure. Maybe a topical ointment.
Yeah. But we don't. But to you that point, what? We don't know how to use them.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I was going to say. You guys are like, I got a kit, but I'm like, you know what to do? Like, when you're like in an emergency and you're just fumbling through all the things, you know what they're in there. And I think that's just the whole thing is like, when we have these babies, we love them so dang much, but nobody teaches us what to do when things go wrong.
Yeah.
And it's no parent's fault. We just aren't taught that. That's just a gap in education. And that's kind of where, man, I just go into the ER every day and I see all these things and all these worried parents and I'm like, man, I've got to help somehow
because
so many parents just don't really know what to do, and they can. That's the thing, is you don't have to be an expert to save your child from choking or to save them when they're bleeding out or to know what to, if to take them in or not, if they hit their head, all those things. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you guys are exactly right. I think parents do have that intuition and they do have some sort of knowledge base, but like there's just a whole next level of empowerment and confidence that they can have.
Okay, so this is great to hear you say that, that there is a gap in education. Maybe it makes us all feel bonded together. Okay, so first aid and your approach is that it's more than just having the stuff. You got to have the skills. So what are some general skills that parents can learn to help them be a little bit more confident?
Yeah, so I mean, there's a few emergencies that you're like, yeah, you can kind of wait for help, and then there's
okay.
a few that you just really can't. You just really need to know exactly what to do if it happens, and one of those is choking. I'm so passionate about choking because my own son, I could have lost him to choking, and I have just become so passionate about educating parents on choking, and some people say, yeah, I know the Heimlich maneuver. I know that I'm supposed to hit their back, but like, do you know exactly where to hit their back? And how hard to hit their back, and what position the child should be in when you hit their back. And so, number one, learn what to do if your child or baby chokes. And it is, you know, if they're younger than 12 months old, you're going to do 5 back blows with the heel of your hand right between their shoulder blades, and they're hard, firm back blows. And the baby's head, you know, their tummy's to the floor, their head's kind of lower than their hips, and you're doing 5 firm back blows. That's usually, if you do them right, going to get the object out. And then if they're above 1 to 2 years, then you're going to move into the Heimlich maneuver. And, you know, you can Google all of this. I have a whole bunch of demo videos, but we have to know what to do if our child chokes.
Okay, so what are the other skills? So we've got choking, and I should note too and acknowledge that, you know, here on the radio show, as we're talking, I mean, this developing these skills and learning these skills requires a little bit more than describing it. You know, and taking the time to be able to watch some of those videos and being able to run through it may take, you know, 10 to 15 minutes a couple times a day over several days. But having that knowledge is important.
Yep. Yep. And then the other one you talked about is bleeding. You know, if your child did hit an artery or hit something that you just can't stop that blood. That's a skill. That's a skill that a parent needs to know how to stop that and where to wrap it and how much pressure and how long to hold it and what to use, what's in your first aid kit that can actually stop that bleeding. There's something called Quick Clot out there in the world. If anybody's listening and you guys want that in your first aid kit, it works wonders.
What's it
for
called?
Bleeding. It's called Quick Clot.
Clot. C-L-O-O-T.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
See that? That's right. We use it in the ER, but it's available, you know, to anybody. And it's just amazing stuff.
If we are out, like at a lake or hiking or away from, oh, shoot, we should just take them, you know, really quick to the emergency room or call 911. What are the basics that we should do when there is a bleed?
Yeah, so you'll always want to hold pressure. So wherever the bleed is, get something, wrap it right around hold pressure on the bleed. And if it's really bad, you will want to tie a tourniquet above the bleed, closer to the core of the body, so that there's, you know, we're kind of cutting off that blood circulation to help them so that they don't bleed out.
You know, for so many parents as they're listening to this, like just the sight of blood or the incurrence of an accident puts them in paranoia, stress, all of these things. Having the opportunity to actually have the forethought before any of these things occur can save your child's life.
I love that you said that because that's just it. You know, when we prepare and educate while we're calm, then when it happens, I get messages every day on Instagram saying, I just saved my child. I just did this. I just did this.
Oh.
And I stayed calm and I knew exactly what to do. And it's like, yes, because you took time to learn why you were calm. Because if we wait till it's an emergency, everything goes out the window. And so when you learn when you're calm, then you retain the information and you're able to help.
Shannon Tripp is a registered nurse with 10 years of pediatric emergency room experience. She's also a mom. She knows what she's talking about as we are discussing at home first aid and those summertime situations that might call for really quick thinking and important skills. We've talked a little bit about choking and bleeding. What are some other situations or skills that parents should have a working knowledge of?
So every kid is going to fall and bump their head. And we need to know as parents when it's an emergency and when it's not an emergency. And truly over, you're right, we can't talk about it a lot right now, but let me give you two questions to ask yourself if your child hits their head.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, is it getting better or is it getting worse? There is like this little 20 to 30 minute time, you know, where they're crying and they're upset. But after that, are they getting better or are they getting worse? That's a huge red flag if they're getting worse. And then also, if you step back and you didn't know if they hit their head, would you be worried about their behavior? Generally, if you can answer those two questions, you will know whether to have them seen or not.
That's great. It's very specific. One thing that we haven't talked about, too, is prevention. There's a lot of different sort of summertime situations that, you know, you probably see as an ER nurse that you think, oh, would people stop doing this or be more careful about that? Now's your time to lay it out for us.
Yay. I've been waiting all day for this.
Well, good.
Okay, number one, please watch your kiddos when they are around water and know that most drowning accidents happen outside of swim time. So if you're around a pool, make sure it's safe. If you're around any sort of body of water, kids, young babies can drown in just less than an inch of water, which is just crazy to think about. And so again, drowning is 100% preventable. How cool is that? 100% preventable. Yeah. We just need to watch our kids. And that is, man, it's so devastating and so, so busy right now in the ER. The other thing is if you have young kids, old kids, ATV accidents are huge, and it's just very, very terrible to see a little kid that was riding on dad's lap or a teenager that was riding without a helmet, and it happens every day in the ER. I bet if all my ER friends could tell me one thing, it would be careful on ATVs and wear a helmet. And then the third thing that comes to mind is closing those second-story windows. You guys would not believe how many kiddos get next to a screen and they're playing or jumping and they fall out of the second story window. Mm. So those are the three that after talking to my ER friends this summer, those are the three that really, really stick out to us of things that we can do to prevent injuries and tragedies happening to our kiddos.
You know, and a lot of these examples are life or death situations, but there are some other sort of first aid considerations that occur within the summertime with our kids. And I'm pointing at you, sunburn, where
that's
a concern that can be pretty dramatic for our kids. What can we do within those scenarios?
Yeah, great question. Next week, I'm actually doing a summer safety thing over on my Instagram, and we're going over sunburns and heat dehydration and heat exhaustion and things like that, that just when you're out in the sun, you have to drink more water. And if you're out in the sun for over 20 to 30 minutes, you should have a good coat of sunscreen on, especially on the face of kiddos and parents, of course. And then kids, you know, in the summertime need to drink. Kids should drink about their age in cups. But in summer, we should up that by at least a few cups because our bodies just go through so much water when it's hot outside.
When we know that we're out for a day, like we're going on a hike or we're going to be playing, you know, near water for all day and we're not really monitoring that, what do we need to keep in mind? Because it's not just water, right? We need some salt. We need some electrolytes. How do we determine what it is that our kids are going to need?
Yeah, great question. So, our kids are resilient. They can survive off a lot of things that we give them, but thriving and being healthy, you are exactly right. So if you can have, if they've eaten their fruits and vegetables and water, that's great. But if they have coconut water, that is unbelievably good for our bodies when we are losing a lot of fluid. Even Gatorade, you can get Gatorades with low sugar in them. I just obviously the more sugar we give our kids, the more hard it is. So Gatorade without D2, it's without a lot of sugar, coconut water, mineral water, juice that's diluted, things like that, you can give them, but really just water, 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 water.
Are there other considerations? You've got the megaphone right now.
Yeah, seriously.
Things that maybe we haven't talked about or that we haven't considered, or that you just within your practice and what you do, you're just like, please stop or please start this. Are there any things like that?
Oh, man. How much time do I have?
About 2 minutes.
Yeah.
There's just so much in preparation. And, you know, people get so, I totally get it. I love my babies just like you all love your babies. And we are so blessed to have this gift of intuition to help lead and guide us. So if there's ever something that you're like, man, you know, I'm nervous about this, pay attention to that. Our anxiety comes in to help keep us and our babies safe. So if something's making you nervous, it just means that you need to take time to learn more about it. As you learn more about it, you're going to get more calm and comfortable. And then if it ever happens, you can act on it. And so I would suggest taking a CPR course and first aid course and getting your hands on a mannequin and knowing exactly how hard to push it, not only on your own kid, but somebody else's child.
Sure.
Building your own first aid kit that has those things in it that you actually really do need and that you know how to use. And then just make sure and let your kids live. Let your kids jump on the tramp. Let your kids ride a bike. But we can do those things to prevent bad things from happening. Put a helmet on them. Make sure that there's only a couple kids jumping on the tramp at a time, and they're the same age. You know, there's just so many things that we can do to implement into our homes to make it a safer place for our kids. But our job as parents is to make it a safe place, but let them learn and explore and adventure and be kids. And that's just an awesome thing when you have that kind of education and intuition combined and you're able to let kids be kids and know that you're doing your very best.
You've mentioned that you provide resources that people can kind of follow along on social media and online. Where can people go?
Yeah, sure. My Instagram is Shan Tripp, S-H-A-N-T-R-I-P-P. And I say that first because that's where I put so much free education out there for parents. And then I have a website where I have medical courses and master classes where we talk to ER physicians, and that's all at shantripp.com.
Shannon Tripp, a registered nurse here helping us to keep our kids safe this summer and talking about first aid. I got to find that first aid kit. That will be my test.
I got one. Well, I got to open mine up and see what's in there.
Where are all the Band-Aids?
Well, that's what happens. Yep. They get into there. I'll just take this and then you open it.
There were scissors here and there are not anymore. Shannon, thanks for being on the show with us.
Coming up, have you ever felt afraid to introduce your partner to your family? Up next, we're going to be giving you the confidence to be able to do it.
And if you have not yet entered in Lisa's Adventure Club, a quick reminder, go to BYURadio.org. Make sure that you give us your information so that we may contact you. That's what it's for. Otherwise, we go, what's this information? Who do we know how to contact? We don't know what to do.
Does anyone have a pen?
We have an annual National Parks Pass. What are we supposed to do with this? It's BYURadio.org. Be sure that you go and enter to win today. You're listening to The Lisa Show. We'll be right back.
Found it.
Now don't forget where you put it.
Welcome to the Lisa Show.
Thank you for listening to the show. We're going to talk about the best ways to raise tech dual citizens, and that's coming up in 20 minutes.
And in your morning buzz, the French Dispatch cast has made the news again. It's trending online, but for a different reason, and I love it so much. I'll tell you about it coming up.
Have you ever been in the position where you're just afraid or maybe very nervous to introduce your partner to your family?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it can be nerve-wracking. What happens if your family disapproves or if your partner disapproves of your family? Well, today we're having a conversation about what you should do if your partner and family don't get along. To join us, we've invited Tracy McMillan. Tracy's a television writer, relationship expert, and author, and recently worked on the show Family or Fiancé and helped many work through their partner and family conflicts. Welcome, Tracy.
Hello, good morning.
What is it that the reason do you think that many people are afraid to introduce their partners to their family?
Well, I think that in one very real sense, a partner is a reflection of you. the noted psychologist Carl Jung believed that your partner is you as a man or you as a woman. Huh. So I think that there's one thing about introducing the new partner to the family is it's going to tell your family something about you that maybe they didn't know before.
Interesting. I don't think I've ever thought of it that way. How common then?
But think about it. It makes sense, right?
Yeah. Well, and it gives you that feeling of sort of like pushback of like why it seems so personal when you're making just an mm-hmm. introduction. I'm wondering how common it is for a family to disapprove of a family member's partner. Is it common?
It's very common. I always say, so I host the show Family or Fiancé on the Oprah Winfrey Network. And I always, and the premise of the show is that the couple wants to get married, they're mm-hmm. engaged, and the families are against it. We get everybody under one roof for 3 days to work it out. And I always say that Prince Harry and Meghan Markle are the world's most famous episode of Family or Fiancé. Because it's a universal problem that your family has trouble, potentially, with the person you've chosen. Now, why is this? Well, in part because our issues in our relationships start in our family.
Yeah.
Mm. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, just to use Harry and Meghan as an example, she's very much in the same position that his mother was in, which is this woman who's a superstar who, you know, is like a giant light, an attention-seeking object that kind of overshadows the family. And it's like, well, he picked that because that's his mom, you know. It's like that is how people do it. Whatever we have unresolved from childhood, we bring into our adult relationship.
So what are some things then that we can do if we suspect that our family might have difficulty with our partner, in absence of being able to be on this TV show and have 3 days to be able to work it out?
Yeah.
What are some things that we can kind of engage and do or maybe not do to help make that introduction a little smoother?
Well, what I would say, first of all, is don't make it about being, it's like, don't make it about yourself. Don't make it about being liked. Know that when your partner gets around the family, and I'm like, let's say you're the woman. I'll just use, you know, from my own perspective. Your partner is going to have family patterns surface automatically. So there's a lot to learn when you see your partner in the family context. You get to see, oh, what person were they in the sibling order? What role do they play in the family? So that's the first thing, is that I would be there to observe more than being liked. Hmm. Don't think you're there to be judged. Think you're there to be of service. How is it that you can be part of this bigger thing, the family? You want to find your place in it. And that has to do with, you know, basically being a loving presence and thinking about what you can give, as opposed to what you can get from these people, i.e. approval. And because there's much more going on than just getting the approval. If you are looking for approval, you're giving the family all the power, and that's not necessary. They don't even want that. They just want you to be you, and slowly they will get used to this new person, you. You know, because generally speaking, there have been people before you that the family had relationships with that they may miss that person. They may have preferred that person. There's all sorts of things going on when you step into a family because families are complicated.
We're talking with Tracy McMullen about what to do when your partner and family don't get along. And she's worked on the show Family or a Fiancé and helped a lot of people as a relationship expert in these issues. I'm curious, as your time as a relationship coach, what would you say is one of the main reasons or maybe a few of the main reasons that you think that a family will disapprove of a partner? And is there any way to sort of to work through these things, or do you just have to change the way that you talk?
Work through them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you can definitely work through them. I mean, here are some of the most common things are that the family perceives that now they are going to be in second position.
Mm-hmm.
And the partner is now more important than the family, that he's going to choose the partner over the family. Now, of course, you've got to choose your partner over your family.
Right.
Your partner's your partner.
Yeah.
That's the source of your new family. So the family, in some ways, a lot of times a mother doesn't want to let go of a son, or a best friend doesn't want to let go of the best friend. They want to stay, they want things to stay structured the way they've always been. But interestingly, the family sort of has to grow up, if you will. They have to be like, oh, our son or daughter is grown and they are making their own family, and we have to allow that to happen. We can't be over here going, make a choice. We need to support the what's called individuation, which is where you know and become a separate person from your parents, from your family. So that's number one, the number one cause, I would say. Number two is that they have something different in mind for you. They don't like your choice. You know, for instance, I have one of the couples on the show is an immigrant family. In this immigrant family, there are three choices of your life. You can be a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer.
Oh, wow.
Pick one of those. And then your partner can be a doctor, lawyer, or an engineer. Pick one, right?
Yeah.
So when the man showed up with a partner that was not a doctor, lawyer, or an engineer, the mother was like, and was a single mom, the mother was like, absolutely not.
Yeah.
You know?
Oh, wow.
So that's another big reason. It's like, we had something else in mind for you. And then another reason is that they liked the previous person better.
Yep.
That happens quite often. They just, you know, the person had a girlfriend or boyfriend in the past that they preferred, and they don't like this new person. They want the old person back, which, of course, is a fantasy.
If people haven't watched the TV show Family or Fiancé, is there a moment like in some of these other TV shows that you'll see where you get to the end of the particular program and they come to the person and they go, okay, which are you going to pick, your family or your fiancé? Is it that sort of setup?
Oh, yeah. It's that. Oh, yeah. I mean, not exactly like that. So what we have on day three is a blessing ceremony, where you've got the six family members, and we go to each person. We say, do you bless this marriage, this upcoming wedding? And they either say yes or no. It's kind of like the rose ceremony in The Bachelor.
Sure.
And the job, my job is to coach the couple into getting the blessings. Like, what do we need to resolve here to get this relationship blessed? And sometimes it's something in the couple that needs to get resolved. And sometimes it's something in the family with the couple that needs to get resolved. A lot of times we'll have situations where there are parents who have been like fathers who weren't there, or mothers where there were ruptures, and we've got to repair the rupture before we can get the blessing. So, but yes, there are times when, you know, I'm not here to tell anybody what to do in their relationship unless there's an abuse issue, and that is not okay.
Right.
But other than that, people have to come to their own conclusions. And they definitely do. You know, there are episodes where the relationship does not last.
Yeah.
I'm just here to help the couple find whatever's in the highest good.
And where can people check it out?
It premieres this Saturday night. It's on every Saturday night on OWN at 9 Central and Mountain, and 10 o'clock Pacific and Eastern. It's Saturday night. Premiering July 17th.
Tracy McMillan, our guest, is a television writer, relationship expert, and host of Family or Fiancé. We appreciate you being on the show. Thank you so much. I can't believe it. It's time we get to give away another annual National Parks Pass as part of Lisa's Adventure Club. Lisa, do you want to dial the numbers this week?
Would you let me?
Yeah,
I get so excited, you know, that my fingers just flip it up.
But if your fingers
sometimes
are shaking, yeah, you're not going to hit the right numbers. Okay, calm, calm.
This
All right, here we go.
Sorry.
Hello?
Hello, is this Star Jenkins?
Yeah, this is Star. What can I do for you?
Well, no, it's what can we do for you? Congratulations. This is Lisa from The Lisa Show, and you are the winner of Lisa's Adventure Club.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you have won an annual National Parks Pass for a whole year. That's, you know, what annual means.
That's awesome. Thank you.
Now, are you the adventurous type?
I am, actually, or we are. My family and I are.
Yeah, what kind of adventures you go on?
We always like to go backpacking and like hiking and camping, and so this will be great.
Oh, this is perfect.
Now I have an annual pass, and we can go do some more exploring of the national park.
Now, I want you to dream with us for just a minute, because what we've given you now is essentially access to the 63 national parks in the United States. I know that there are a lot close to home, but if you could go further, a greater destination, somewhere in the United States that maybe you've never been to or you've dreamed about before, where, what national park would you go to?
Like, if I could go anywhere?
Yeah, anywhere.
Sky's the limit.
I would love to go to Alaska. I'm sure they have few national parks.
Oh, yeah.
What we've given you now is the opportunity to dream, because we just made it a little bit more affordable for you and your family to create those experiences, maybe make that vacation destination in the future. And you did it. You did it all
you
yourself.
You did it.
By entering to win Lisa's Adventure Club. Other folks can win just like Star did by going to BYURadio.org. You can enter your information, and you know what? We could be calling you next week, just like we're calling Star today. Congratulations, Star.
Are your kids tech dual citizens? Well, we're going to be talking about how you can best raise them. That's coming up next.
And the cast of The French Dispatch trending online again, but for a different reason. I'll tell you what it is and how you can get in on the fun. It's part of your morning buzz. You're listening to The Lisa Show.
Are you wondering what you're going to do this weekend? You're looking for new ideas, whether you're spending a night in or going out with friends or your family. Well, don't worry. We're going to be sharing a lot of ideas for this weekend. But first, we've got your morning buzz with Richie T.
It's three things that are trending online right now, things that folks are talking about. Over on TikTok, it's all about a toothbrush.
Oh.
A three-sided brush your teeth. Toothbrush.
Oh.
It looks a little funky, but you can get both the inner part of your tooth as well as your outer part of your tooth as well as the bottom of your tooth. All in one stroke. All in one stroke at the same time. It's efficiency, Lisa.
Okay,
I think that you would appreciate this. It is a mouth system of which you might be able to familiarize yourself with. They look silly and ridiculous, but do they work? That question is up to you. Trending over on TikTok. Corn fritters, that's what we're celebrating today.
Ooh.
It's National Corn Fritter Day. Never had a corn fritter? It's fried. There is some debate on what exactly fritters consist of, but one thing is for sure, that you do them either in a pan or a deep fryer. It actually is derived from the Latin word frictura, which means fry.
Good.
That word was derived from frigir, which means to fry. In general, a fritter has a batter or breading and usually has fillings such as meat, seafood, vegetables, or fruit, or who cares, it's fried.
I was going to say, it doesn't matter. Anything that's fried, I really enjoy.
But today, it's corn fritters. Sweet and savory, made with kernels of kernel. Jeez.
Kern?
I leave the kern of the kernel, share the kern. The corn kernels. I don't know. My mouth is doing things today. Flour, milk, eggs, and melted butter. It's all the delicious things.
Yeah,
eat
you
a corn
want all
fritter.
Of those things, and then you want them all fried.
And then finally this, the cast of The French Dispatch, you know, it's premiering at the Cannes Film Festival, and several of the actors were depicted in pictures, right?
Yeah.
So you got your Bill Murray, and you got your Tilda Swinton, and you got your Timothée Chalamet and Wes Anderson, and those are four very unique individuals, and the way that they dress. So trending online right now, they're assigning what the four different people are, like, well, there's your boomer, there's your Gen Z, there's your millennial, and your,
that's funny.
There's also, like, that's the producer, there's the writer, there's the talent. People are having a lot of fun with that. You can just assign what you feel like those four different roles are. It's the cast of The French Dispatch trending online right now, and that's your morning buzz.
How many times have you heard that technology is ruining the youth of today? I mean, it's something that we hear a lot. And it's easy to buy into that narrative that technology is corrupting youth when you focus on stories and statistics that focus on tech addiction, cyberbullying, and disrupted sleep patterns. Though these issues are very real and complex, they don't tell the whole story about the power and potential of technology in the modern world. Equal to its negative potential is also its potential to inspire inclusion, innovation, and change the world. Well, here to help us rewrite the narrative is Richard Culotta, CEO of the International Society for Technology and Education and author of the book Digital for Good, Raising Kids to Thrive in an Online World. Welcome, Richard.
Hi, thanks for having me.
It's such an interesting conversation people are constantly having, especially parents. Like, we just operate on the assumption that this is all negative. Why is it so easy for us just to sort of buy into this story that technology is bad for our kids and we need to keep them from it?
Well, you know, it's interesting because we see certain behaviors that we're concerned about, right? A lot of time,
sure,
maybe on a device instead of doing other activities that we value. And we immediately assume that is, you know, a problem that is inherent to all technology. And I think what we miss is the fact that there's actually this wide range of uses of technology. And instead of sort of painting it all in one brush, either good or bad, right, what we have to do as parents is get better at the nuance and help actually prepare our kids to recognize when using technology is really valuable and when maybe we should move away from certain types of tech.
So as we look to make our kids good digital citizens, what does that look like?
Yeah, so one of the things that is really powerful, and I talk about this in the book, is that there are some really fantastic ways that we can encourage our kids to use technology in ways that actually strengthen our family and draw them closer to their community, right? So one simple example, there's an idea that a lot of families are starting to do that I talk about called device use agreements. And so it's an agreement, like a little contract that you make with your kids as as they're starting to use technology. But one of the things that it outlines is what are the ways that we want them to be using the technology to strengthen our families, right? And normally the thing that we do, right, and we've all seen this, it's the list of don'ts, you know, mm-hmm. don't do this and don't do that and don't be a bully and don't write it. But we often forget to articulate the do's. Right? What do we want them to do? And so in our family, for example, in our device use agreements, we say one of the responsibilities is we want you to capture family moments.
Oh, yeah.
We want you to capture pictures, quotes. We want you to get, and there's many other examples, but that's one simple do that if we can provide to our kids, we can find that the tech, we can actually shift it so it's supporting our family culture, not, you know, pulling away from it.
Oh, that's such a positive take on it. What other advice do you give for ways that it can strengthen the family, especially for people who, you know, probably don't have experience with this in their own families?
Yeah, one of the things that we talk about is just being having parents be more involved in suggesting the types of activities that kids do in virtual spaces. And so, a lot of times when I talk to families and as I was doing the research for the book, I would say, do you recommend, books for your kids, right? Do you recommend, especially in the kids that are in those transition ages between, kids' books and chapter books? It's a really critical time. And almost every parent said, yes, of course, you know, I find books, they get books for presents. And then I said, have you ever recommended an app for your kid? Right. And it was like,
so interesting. Yeah.
Right. So one of the things that we can do, and it's super simple, you know, it takes, you know, not a whole lot of energy for parents to do, find some interesting apps that you think they would like. If your kid's interested in science, there's some great science apps. One of my kids really was curious about what the stars were, you know, which one was which, and I don't know any of that. So I suggested an app called Sky Guide where he can point his phone up to the sky and see what apps are. But the point is, if we as parents can suggest, broaden the palette, our digital palette of our kids a little bit, it actually creates a much healthier digital culture in our family that we are part of, and not just let them choose the apps based on the ads that they see or wherever else they might get the ideas from.
You also write that we need to discuss or rethink really the concept of limiting screen time. How can we reframe the way that we talk to kids about their technology use and the amount of time they're doing it?
Yeah, that's a big one. I'm glad you brought that up. So there is an approach that we've kind of defaulted to, and it's probably the first question I get when I talk to parents is, how much screen time is appropriate for my kid who is, you know, such and such age?
Oh, yeah.
The problem with that is, well, there's a number of problems. One is the research on screen time that people sometimes point to is it's outdated research. It was based on static TV watching, which, you know, is a very different activity mm-hmm. than what's happening on, you know, on devices today. But the bigger problem is when we try to create limits to our device use based on the clock, based on time, mm-hmm. it sends the message to our kids that all tech activities are of the same value.
Yeah, that they're right? all so, created
so,
equal.
Exactly. So, you have 2 hours of screen time today. Whatever you want to do, I don't care, but it's 2 hours, right? That sends a damaging message, because what we want to teach instead is some activities should be able to be done for long periods of time. Others, probably very little. And so I'm not saying don't find ways to create limits, right? What you know, we don't, a kid sitting playing a video game for 10 hours is not healthy. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is there are better ways to do it. And one, if I can give one quick example.
Yes, please.
I look at how we teach kids to eat, right?
Yeah.
In my family, if we didn't have, you know, if we weren't pushing our kids to eat new food, they'd eat mac and cheese every day.
Right.
Like, that's how we eat in our family. And so one of the things that we do in our family is we say, hey, there are things that you can eat any time of day. Water and fruit in our family, you can eat it whenever you want. There are other things that you can eat, you know, healthy big meals. We eat at certain times during the day. And then sometimes we break out the snacks, right? We have some chocolate. We might have some chips, right? But those will happen at times during the day when we've had a healthy meal. And also, it's not going to happen all the time, mm-hmm. right? That's how we should be teaching our screen time, right? Instead of having, you know, food time, could you imagine if we're like, you have 2 hours of food time. You can eat any junk you want for
two hours.
Stop eating at 7 o'clock.
Metaphor, yeah.
And so that's the shift we need to make, is instead of, so yes, we need balance, absolutely, but it shouldn't be based on time. It should be based on the value of the activity that's happening.
I like where we've couched this in citizenship within tech citizenship, and certainly the world is becoming, in some ways, smaller and smaller as we're able to unite with folks in various countries and in, you know, all over the world. What part of citizenship and being good to one another and being courteous and that aspect plays into this tech dual citizenship?
Oh, I think that's really the core. And you know, we've seen it's so important after this COVID experience that we've lived through. Because, look, we've been using our virtual spaces increasingly long before COVID.
Mm-hmm.
But now, if you think about it, many of our lives' most important moments happen in virtual spaces. And so it's not just, you know, transactional. We don't just go there to fill out our taxes, right? Like, this is a place where our most important community engagement and democratic processes happen. But the challenge that we have is that we're not, you know, our often the way we think about, you know, our virtual world or our participation in our virtual world is somewhat selfish, right? It's like, you know, how do we keep ourselves safe? How do we make sure our kids, you know, aren't getting bullied or whatever? There isn't nearly enough conversation about how do we create a healthy community for others in a virtual space. What is our role to be inclusive? What is our role to respect people with differing viewpoints? What is our role to engage when somebody is being treated disrespectfully online? Those are the sorts of conversations. Right? We need to move away from this just kind of block and tackle online safety conversation to one that is about how are we a contributing member of a community, of a virtual community that we want to be part of.
We only have about a minute left. In that time, I'd love for you to just give us your final advice on conversations that you think parents should be having with their children around technology that they're not having.
Oh, yeah, it's a great one. The first thing that I would say is just have more of them, right?
Like, yeah. Like frequency.
Sometimes I feel like parents, you know, the kid gets their first device and they give them the list of don'ts, and then that's like the last we talk about technology use.
Yeah.
And in healthy families, in families where we don't have that, you know, that stress, a lot of families I talk to have just stress around their technology use. And one of the things that I find is they're actually not talking with their kids about it very often. And so simple things like periodically just saying, hey, what did you do in your virtual spaces today? Right. Just like when our kids go and hang out with a friend somewhere or go to a physical party and they come back and we say, hey, what'd you do? How was it? What'd you do? We should be having those same conversations with our kids about what they're doing online. And we can make it fun. Hey, what was the coolest trend that you saw? You know, just before I came on the air, you were talking about the trends on TikTok, right? Those are fun conversations that we can have. But they lead into more more meaty, serious conversations, doing things like, how can we use tech in our family to help make the world a better place?
Richard Collada is the CEO of the International Society for Technology and Education and the author of the book Digital for Good, Raising Kids to Thrive in an Online World. If you want to learn more about his work, you can head over to innovativelearning.com.
Such a great and an important conversation and continuing conversations to have. I appreciate you having this on The Lisa Show.
Absolutely. You know, coming up, a very important conversation as you look forward to your weekend. What are you going to do?
Right?
Do you know? Have you thought about it? You knew the weekend was coming. We have your weekend review for you.
Thank you for listening to The Lisa Show.
It is the weekend here on The Lisa Show. It's also the weekend everywhere else. I don't know why I say things like that.
It was very specific, and I appreciate it.
Here in this very room, it's the weekend. I'm not sure how it feels everywhere else, but you can always look forward to here on The Lisa Show that we give you a lot of information, a lot of little teases, things that you can maybe do this weekend, things that you can maybe eat this weekend. But we always start with things that maybe you can stream and watch this weekend.
Because you might have a little extra time and you don't want to spend it just scrolling through. If you're like me, sometimes I can waste an entire hour trying to decide one thing to watch. This is why we give you some ideas and some specifics so that you can go, I got to write that down. Oh, yeah.
May I take it one step further? We also do this because it's so hot outside.
Yeah.
We know that you're maybe not going outside. And so you're like, well, I burned through that series they told me about last week. What do we got?
Especially during like 10 and 2, right? Okay, so over on Netflix, let's get to it. Last summer, during summer vacation in a beachside town, 16-year-old Denise seeks the affection of his childhood crush and navigates a love triangle.
Ratchet and Clank. This is the affable alien Ratchet, who longs to be a galactic ranger and might get the chance when rogue robot Clank tells him of evil Drek's plot to destroy a galaxy.
Also, Lethal Love. After a business owner starts receiving online threats, doubts and paranoia creep in when she reconnects with a former flame and meets a new client.
It seems to me like when we're reconnecting with childhood crushes or former flames, that's where a movie ensues.
Yeah, right?
We should probably watch out if ever we were to do something like that. Virgin River. This is searching for a fresh start. A nurse practitioner moves from L.A. to a remote Northern California town and is surprised by what, and wait for it, who she finds.
Also on Netflix, Midnight Sun. Born with a fatal sensitivity to sunlight, a sheltered teen girl falls for her neighbor, but hides her condition from him as their romance blossoms.
Over on Hulu, it's Summer of Soul. It's a feature documentary about the legendary 1969 Harlem Cultural Festival, which celebrated African-American music and culture and promoted Black pride and unity.
Also, my All-American, Freddie Steinmark, an underdog on the gridiron, faces the toughest challenge of his life after leading his team to a championship season.
The Complex Lockdown. After a major bioweapon attack on London, two scientists debate whether to save a suspected terrorist's life. However, assassins have infiltrated the building.
What?
Come on, who let them in? Who let the assassins in? I'm telling you. And soon, the scientists find themselves with time and options running out.
Over on Amazon Prime, The Tomorrow War, a family man named Dan Forrester, played by Chris Pratt, is drafted to fight in a war 30 years in the future, where the fate of humanity relies on his ability to confront the past in his Amazon original military science fiction action film.
After we talked about it last week, I actually watched it last week.
I actually watched it, too. I liked it.
Did you?
I did.
I liked so many parts of it.
I like the idea of a high school science teacher, like, saving the world.
Sure. Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
Yes, of course.
Like, I think that sounds right.
Mary J. Blige's My Life. This is an Amazon original documentary film with Grammy award-winning recording artist and actress Mary J. Blige, who reveals the demons and blessings that inspired her 1994 LP My Life, and also celebrates the 25th anniversary of her most influential work by performing the album live for the first time.
This weekend, I'm going to be finishing up the Loki series on Disney Plus.
Good
I'm
for
super
you.
Excited. I was resistant to the Marvel Universe, and now I am totally. All the supplementary series that they're creating have been really great TV, and I'm into it.
And Loki, just key among them. Yeah,
so cool.
Yeah, really.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. I haven't gone over to the Disney Plus yet.
I know you haven't, and you know how I feel. Like, you know, Disney's taking over the world, but still. It was a good TV show.
Yeah, yeah. Listen, they've got great ones. What I'm doing is I'm waiting for all of the TV to come out, and then I'll switch over there.
Good.
So I get the message that all TV has been released, I'll flip over. If you're looking for a recipe to try this weekend, you can go to Ambitious Kitchens, which is a great way to, you know, sort of a little tongue twister. They have 31 seasonal dishes for the month of July.
Oh.
First up is their recipe for a delicious chocolate peanut butter banana smoothie.
Oh, that's my jam.
It's only 5 ingredients, but it tastes like a Wendy's Frosty, but healthier.
Ooh. Next, we're trying the Blender Banana Spinach Muffins. It's a great recipe. It's kid-friendly. It will help, like, sneak in some of those greens. Also over at Ambitious Kitchen.
For dinner, excited to try out the recipe for grilled chicken, bacon, ranch, pasta.
I like all those things.
Yeah, they just like, what else do we like? We like ranch. Put some of that in there. It's a wonderful, easy chicken bacon pasta salad, perfect for customizing and guaranteed to be a hit all summer long.
And then for dessert, try the lemon blueberry zucchini cake with lemon frosting. It's easy, gluten-free blueberry zucchini cakes, and it has a little bit of oat and almond flour, and it's naturally sweetened with a honey, so it's a little bit healthier, right? And it's good for using up all that summer produce that you have laying around, and feeling good about, we're going to make dessert tonight. Yeah, why not every night?
Zucchini, cucumber, and tomatoes are starting on in Hargrotter Gardens over at the Homesteadman. We've done zucchini, and we'll do zucchini again on the smoker, on the grill this weekend.
That's nice. What do you marinate it with?
We put it in olive oil, and then there's a special seasoning that it's called vegetable seasoning, and you sort of just sprinkle it on like a dry rub like you would on a meat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then you just cook it low and slow, and then you bite in and you go, I don't even need to eat anything ever again.
Oh,
this is great.
Good.
And it's so fresh. It's so fresh because we literally, in some cases, have chopped it, you know, chopped the little head and the tail off of the zucchini, cut it up right outside, not even taking it inside to
are
the kitchen
you
to prep
kidding
it.
Me?
No, we don't mess around.
Don't forget to share with your neighbors who are gardening challenged.
Challenged in the gardening.
Just share.
Arena.
If you're good at growing things, share with your neighbors who are not.
Okay. There are some great podcasts that you should listen to. Might I recommend to you The Lisa Show? Now, here's the deal.
When you first
get into this, you're like, she's really great, but that guy yells a lot. Is he mad? They're just two friends. They talk about entertaining, inspiring, and educational things every single day. You never know what you're going to get. You may have the youngest astronaut heading into space in one break, and then the next one you're talking about a brand new sport called Gaga Ball. You don't know what you get, but you can find it as The Lisa Show and find it wherever you get podcasts.
Another positive podcast to listen to is NPR cares louder than a riot. Louder than a riot is urgency has grown louder than ever before with hosts Rodney Carmichael and Sydney Madden. And they deliver some of the most incisive and pertinent investigative journalism going around in the podcast game.
The Laverne Cox Show. If you're looking to become a better person, expand your mind, you can listen to the hypnotic voice of Laverne Cox. Accomplish all those three things, that is, better person, expand your mind, and listen to a hypnotic voice by listening to the Laverne Cox Show.
Also, Modern Love. Modern Love is a weekly column, a book, a podcast, and now, in its 17th year, a TV show about relationships, feelings, betrayals, and revelations.
You must remember this. No, that's the name of the podcast. You must remember this is the podcast dedicated to exploring the secret and or forgotten histories of Hollywood's first century. The podcast was created and is written, produced, and narrated by Karina Longworth. That sounds awesome. And you know what it's a nod to, of course. You must remember this.
You must remember this.
A little Casablanca. Mm-hmm. Check that out. You must remember this.
If you're looking to get out and sort of connect with people, get outdoors, put on your sunscreen, mm-hmm. even though it's hot, you can do it. There are a lot of events going around the country. If you're around Utah this weekend, you can try visiting a farmer's market. There are many, many all over the states. You can look in your state for a farmer's market. Maybe it's something that you've never done before, or maybe there's one that's maybe a little bit out of the way. Mm-hmm. This is a great time of year to explore that. Like you said, produce is coming up. There are a lot of different crafts and sort of one-of-a-kind items ready to just kind of explore. I've gotten some really great art mm-hmm. at some of these farmers markets, which kind of surprised me.
It's one of the things actually that my wife and I love to do when we travel, because typically on a Saturday in a given area, there will be somewhere a farmers market. And so we'll go and you get sort of the, what is this craft that they're selling? Oh, it's, you know, it's oceanside glass that's washed up on the shore and they made it into jewelry. And it's like, oh, that's cool. You can find some cool stuff like that. Speaking of the coast, the Oregon coast is having a huge music festival this weekend. You don't want to miss it. The Oregon Coast Music Festival has been a success since 1979.
This weekend, especially because of the weather, could be the perfect weekend to visit a local museum with your friends or family. You know, there's so many different kinds, science and technology, art, you know, music, whatever kind of museum you have in your local area. Chances are it is open now and has been closed for a while and needs, you know, people to come not only support it, but also since it's been a while, it could be really interesting and you could discover something new.
Speaking of since it's been a while, mm-hmm. there are these buildings. Check this out.
Okay.
These buildings.
Yeah.
Dark.
Oh, okay.
You can get a big bucket of popcorn and you can watch a movie not on your home screen, but with other people enjoying a movie on a large screen with really loud sound.
Tell me more.
Movie theater is what it's called. and most movie theaters across the country are now open. I know for a lot of people, it has been a long time since you've been to the movie theater. Mm-hmm. A lot of safety practices still in place. Obviously, in some places, you'd be encouraged or required to wear a mask should you go out to the movie theater this weekend. But maybe it's time. Maybe there's something that's out in the theaters that you're like, I need to go. I need to go check that out. I need to go exercise those sitting in the dark muscles. The
is that
arm,
a thing?
Yeah, the hand to face from bucket of popcorn to mouth sort of muscles. You don't want those to atrophy.
No way.
No.
Now, if you're looking for a good book, and who isn't, there are some new items on the New York Times bestseller list. Once Upon a Time in Hollywood by Quentin Tarantino. It's the novelization of the film that maybe some of you saw in 1969 by its director and screenwriter.
Nightmare scenario, Yasmin Abutaleb and Damian Paletta, two Washington Post journalists, give an account of the Trump administration's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic.
Also, Reborn in the USA by Roger Bennett. The soccer commentator describes how he embraced American popular culture while growing up in Liverpool.
And finally, that one last book suggestion as we set you free into your weekend, Allie Cross's Like Father, Like Son. This is by James Patterson. Allie investigates the shooting of new friend Zoe. You can find all of those books on the New York Times bestsellers list and encourage you, you know, whether you're reading them electronically or you're getting the old paper in the hand, find yourself poolside reading a book, maybe explore something different this weekend. Do something different that you haven't done.
So as we look to the weekend personally, I can't help but know that you would be excited for what I'm doing this weekend.
Oh, okay.
So try and not be jealous.
Oh.
Try and contain your excitement.
Okay. Well, I make no such promises.
Try and, well, I guess I tell you this more for anything else, then maybe you could speak into it and help me through this weekend. I'm doing the pre-move this weekend, which we're not moving yet. We don't have a new home purchased. We just know that we're going to be moving.
So you're boxing things up and cleaning and organizing?
Yes.
Lucky.
And getting rid of stuff. Now, Here is where you don't want to do this. When your particular city is in a heat wave and it'll be triple digits and most of your stuff is either outside in a storage building or you have to do a considerable amount of this work in the out of doors.
Oh,
so we'll be getting up super early tomorrow morning, like ridiculously. We'll
Good
probably get up the time that I normally get up to do this show, get up. Work for a few hours, try and have that nap in sort of the middle of the day. I'll incorporate a big meal and call it a siesta and then get back to work at it again in the night. But going through countless childhood memories and saying, all right, what am I really doing here?
Oh, are you mentally prepared? And I'm being 100% serious with what you will keep and what you will throw away?
Not completely.
Okay.
But with the recent passing, I think I talked about this here on the show, of my grandmother.
Yeah.
She was by no means a hoarder or a pack rat or any of those sort of negative terms that we give, but she held on to some things that were important to her.
Well, and you live a life and you have decades, you know, then you're going to collect some stuff, some memories.
But it was very clear to me at her passing that most of those things, we, as in her, you know, her offspring or her, you know, generations down below, we don't know what those things are.
Yeah,
we don't know why she kept them. We didn't know why they were significant. And so most of those things are going to, you know, either a secondhand store or to these organizations that can repurpose things and allow them, you know, like a Habitat for Humanity and all these different things, because we want to make sure that would be how she would have us to re-steward these things.
That's wonderful.
Give them to someone else. But I look at that within my own life and go, yeah, you know, if for some reason, and I don't want to get weird or like, you know, jinxy or anything like that. But if for some reason I were to pass, I'm holding on to a lot of stuff that people would go, why did he hang on to this?
Yeah, we don't know what the significance is this to you, because you want to honor the person. But and you don't want to just think about it in terms of your death.
Yep.
You also want to think about, is it serving you? Could it serve somebody else better too for an object? Am I really saving any time, money, mental stress by holding on to it?
And I want to take it one step further, and I'm really doing this because I just don't want to move all this stuff. And for me, it seems easier to just be like, I can put it in a bag. I can take that bag to the thrift shop and I can get this done, and I can do these in snackable pieces to get done.
Good
as
job.
Opposed to the big move that we all dread and why we don't move, maybe when we should or should have moved a long time ago. Because we look at that and go, that sounds miserable.
Yeah.
So I'm doing the pre-move today.
Okay, so do you have a good, like, something good to drink, something good to eat that day? Because this is some you're going to need all the motivation you can grow.
Well, I've got plenty of hydration and
electrolytes. Electrolytes.
Yep. Especially with the heat. Oh, I know. I've got the long sleeve light shirt so I don't get too much sun exposure. So I'm good as far as that goes. Food is tricky, and I would be curious because, like, I like the big weighty kind of things, and you can't have any energy at the point that you work a ton, stop down to eat something. Like, pizza is always the sort of
food, but then it makes everybody feel
so sleepy.
I think the best moving food, sandwiches.
Okay.
Sandwiches. Like, don't go too, you know, don't get, you know, a foot long, but if just a regular kind of 6-inch sub or a, like a nice sandwich that's got a good mix of vegetables and protein.
Okay.
I think it'll give you the energy that you need. It won't feel too heavy, but it also feels like hearty.
This is a complete aside, but you know what I recognize I'm going to do? As you were saying that, I know exactly what I'm going to do.
You're
going
to go to your sandwich shop where they know your name?
Yeah. No, it's a little too far out. I have not yet this summer had a chicken salad sandwich on a croissant.
Oh!
And that to me,
there you go.
It may be too much, But I don't care. I don't care at this point. As soon as you said, think about a sandwich, I was like, you know what? It's summertime,
yeah.
And I haven't had that refreshing chicken salad sandwich. So that is my plan.
That's awesome.
I'm pre-moving and eating a chicken salad sandwich.
Perfect.
That's right, kids. This is what you have to look forward to when you get older. You're looking forward to your chicken salad sandwich and moving.
Amazing.
What do you got going on this weekend?
Well, it's kind of an exciting weekend for me.
Mm-hmm.
As I may or may not have mentioned on this show a while ago, I acted in a movie. It's a sequel to a movie that I did about 6 years ago. The original movie was Once I Was a Beehive, and this sequel is Once I Was Engaged. I play a crazy mother. I was going to say crazy is not the right word. Intense, loving, maybe loves too much, if that's possible. I don't think so, but some people might. Mother of the bride in this really fun family comedy. And I'm really, really excited. So this weekend is a bunch of parties and interviews and get-togethers in anticipation for the premiere event, which is Monday, July 19th.
Which is awesome.
So I'm really excited. So our director and producer and just basically my friends.
Yeah,
are coming
all the
town.
Gangs getting together, and it's just going to be
48. We're getting the band back together.
To 72 hours of laughing, being loud, and eating a lot of food. Now,
so I'm excited.
I'm excited because our weekend plans, we will be able to join together because one of your interviews that you're doing this weekend will be me for something that I do completely different, and I get to be able to visit
so
with
nice
you,
of you.
And I have to pretend like we don't spend countless hours with each other every day and have all of our inside jokes and all that. But are you anxious about the movie to come out?
I am. Yeah. I think anybody who works on a artistic project that they like, where that you have to sort of put yourself out there, and especially in acting is I feel like really vulnerable, like, this is me, this is what I sound like and look like and whatever, and this is the creative choice that I made, and now it's locked on the screen forever. It is a very vulnerable, uncomfortable thing, and so I sort of have to push through that in order to say, I just hope people go and laugh, right? And the reason why I do this and why my friends and I want to make movies and do these kind of creative projects is because we want people to be able to go and laugh and have a good time and create something that is that will do that and create those sort of moments when people like gather together and make plans, go into a theater, and we just want people to enjoy it so much. We want to sort of, and it sounds cheesy, but this is how I honestly feel, just spread the joy. Like, it has been a rough time for all of us. It is time to get together with your friends and go in a theater and laugh. It is. And I'm so excited, and I hope that that lots of people get to do that because of our work.
You know, you've said a couple times within talking about this acting thing. Now, here's the thing. If you've seen the Once I Was a Beehive and then get the opportunity to see Once I Was Engaged, and you wonder, is Lisa actually like that? Yes, that is how she is. You will see her
on
the screen.
Come on, I'm acting a little bit.
When?
Stop.
When? Having had the opportunity to see the new film kind of in advance of all of this, I would... And I know that you get super uncomfortable about stuff like this, so let me just say it for you. It's really good. It's a great, as you indicated, a great family film and an opportunity for people to go. You're not going to be like, oh, is this going to be safe? Are we going to be, you don't need to worry about any of that kind of stuff. It's just funny. A lot of quirky inside jokes that I'm like, hey, I know why we made this inside joke. And I think that people will really like it. It's called Once I Was Engaged.
Thank
Can people
you.
See it
Thanks.
All? Can people see it all over? Will it
well,
be?
Well, there is a limited theatrical release, so we'll have it in theaters in like Arizona and Idaho, and hopefully like in California for a while. Here's the thing: we don't know if people are going to go to the theater to see a movie with so many streaming options. The way that movies being released have been and have changed. Mm-hmm. It's hard to predict patterns
right
now. So we hope that people go to the theater and have that experience.
Sure.
So that's what we're focused on.
Yeah, get out and see it, especially the opening weekend, because that helps it to be able to see into other things. But kudos.
We hope to have it spread. I mean, that would be my dream, to have it, you know, all across the country and have people, you know, who I grew up with who are living in Nebraska or the East Coast and stuff be able to see it as well. And that would be fun.
Now, can I ask you one more question about that before
Always.
We wrap up the show?
Always.
Will your kids go, and are your kids excited about this, or is it a thing that
well,
they're just like...
Well, fun fact, my daughter, my youngest daughter, Margaret, is in the movie. And my son, Hugh, who's...
Who?
Yeah.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm, 16, he worked in on the crew.
Uh-huh.
As the second AD. And so he was like a production assistant. And so it's been a family affair. It's funny because I told my kids, I'd really like it if you guys were at the premiere. And they're like, when is it again? You know?
I don't know, Mom.
They're
got
sort
lots
of
things.
Over it. They know.
And another movie, Mom. Okay.
They might have a better offer. I hope they'll make it. I've told them, I got you a ticket. You know, don't you guys want to come see your mom on the movie? And they're like, do you want us to answer that?
Yeah.
Listen, if anyone's worried about my ego, don't. I've got a house full of teenagers.
Yeah, 17 teenagers will help you.
It's fine.
You just leave the tickets out on the counter and say,
I hope to see you.
If this ticket is here when I get back from the premiere, your bags will be packed and on the porch.
Can you imagine?
Come
no,
Tuesday
no,
morning.
No, no, no. It's just a fun thing. We want to invite everybody to the party.
What do you say? Because I know, like, going on stage, you say break a leg. Is there something that we should be saying to you as you go into opening weekend-ish?
Yeah. I bought a ticket.
I bought a ticket. Bought a ticket.
The Lisa Show is a production of BYU Radio. You can find everything that you need on that BYU Radio app. Maybe you're listening to it right now on that app. We are also on Sirius XM channel 143.
Also available in podcast. Find The Lisa Show wherever you get your podcasts. You can search out The Lisa Show and be sure to click subscribe.
Coming up on Monday's show, we're going to help you get the day and the week started off the right way by telling you something good.
Thank you for making The Lisa Show a part of your day.